Welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. Every episode, we're going to explore the legacy of an extraordinary woman in film and how she changed the landscape of cinema for the better. And this week, we will be diving into the side-splitting world of Regina Hall, comedy genius turned working-class heroine. And in our Bechdel Hot Take section, we'll be looking at the ever-evolving roles of women in comedy. I'm your host, Beth Webb, and I'm joined today by my Bechdel Test First partners in crime. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with Karina Antrobus.
And Karina, who are you?
I'm the founder of Bechdel Test First.
Thank you. Who else have we got in the room?
We have Caitlin Quinlan. Hello, hello.
Hello, Caitlin. How would you describe yourself in the Bechdel getup?
I am kind of editorial lead in some ways. I run the newsletter, social media, stuff like that. All round sort of helping hand for that kind of stuff.
And that just leaves one more.
Hello, it's Steph Watts calling from across the table.
And Steph Watts, how do you slot into the fabric of the greater Bechdel Test First?
I am kind of assets chief, so I make a lot of the stills, GIFs, videos that you see going out on Bechdel, and yeah, any kind of bits and bobs that might go out through that.
And now to you, Beth. What do you do? How do you fit into the fabric of this Bechdel blanket?
Well, I found myself, especially this year, just being a bossy old bossy pants who just bosses a lot of people.
We need you to keep us in check.
Yeah, the dominatrix. I'll take that.
Yeah. BDSM, Bechdel DSM.
We could work with Bechdel Death First again.
Bechdel Test First. Yes, no, I'm just a general busybody about the Bechdel world, to be honest. We've had such a great, like, this has been my favourite year, I think. No offence to the other years whatsoever, but this has been my favourite Bechdel year. But it has meant a lot of work. And I've just been there doing anything I can to help, kind of as and when, but it's all worth it because I love you and I love what we do and it's the best. So that's me in very, very generic terms. So in our first episode, which we did on the wonderful Josephine Decker, we did go into some detail as to what we do and what the Bechdel Test First is. If you'd like to brush up on us properly, please do go back and listen to the episode. Listen to it anyway, it's great. But just for anybody coming in with fresh ears, I suggest we do just a lightning quick round as to who we are and what the Bechdel Test is. Karina, as somebody who says this probably more than her own name, could you please just very briefly describe to us what the Bechdel Test is?
I will. So the Bechdel Test is a very low bar measure and it has three rules. In order for a film to pass the test, it needs to have two named women that have a conversation with each other about something other than a man. Very low bar measure. Very, very few films actually pass the test. We're looking at about 50%, which if you think at all it needs to do is have Katie ask Julie for the salt, then that's a very pathetic metric that we're trying to struggle over. It is written by Alison Bechdel, who is an American cartoonist, and 35 years ago she created the rule which inspired the test to this day. So if you check out the rule, Google image it, it's great, and it says a lot of truth about the disproportionate representations of women in all their interesting dynamic forms on screen.
Yeah, so this is us, this is what we're about. I'd love to hear a little bit about what you've been up to lately, and if you could recommend something that you've seen lately that either passes the test or that celebrates women in film in a way that you would like our listeners to go away and investigate or watch or look at. The floor is yours. If we start with, we'll start with Caitlin.
So there's been two kind of festivals recently, Sheffield Dockfest, and we had Sundance London as well. There were so many films directed by women, about women. A highlight from Sundance London, I'd probably say The Farewell, which I know, Beth, you enjoyed as well.
Cried myself into a state of dehydration.
Yeah, it's an emotional time.
Like, had to drink loads of water afterwards. It was really bad.
I'm so gutted I didn't get a chance to see it, but Lulu Wang was on the panels that I went to see at Sundance London, and she's so interesting and inspiring, and I just can't wait to watch it.
It's a really wonderful story, and I think does a great service to the women that are sort of actors that Lulu Wang works with, as well as her family story. I think there's kind of a real like honor given to matriarchs and women in the family as well as in cinema.
Can you just, because the story is incredible, can you just say what the story to the film is?
So it's based on a true lie, I think is what they call it at the start of the film. So the grandmother of Lulu Wang, the director, is diagnosed with cancer, and it's tradition in Chinese society to not tell aging relatives that they are close to death, essentially. Mm. So the family kind of keep this secret, and it's all about how the granddaughter, played by Awkwafina, kind of navigates her own relationship with that tradition and with not telling her grandmother, who she loves dearly, and how she kind of comes to terms with the fact that she's gonna lose her. It's an emotional time, but it's a very charming film as well.
And so Bechdel Steph was in Chef Eeld Dockfest.
Steffield Dockfest.
Steffield Dockfest. I went about that all wrong, didn't I? but you are our eyes and ears on the ground. On behalf of Bechdel, thank you very much to Sheffield Dockfest for accommodating Steph. How was your first Sheffield Dockfest? What did you see? What did you love?
Yeah, one that like really, really stood out for me was a film called For Summer. And it's a Channel 4 News film, basically all filmed by this female journalist in Syria called Wayed al-Khatib. I think that's how you pronounce her name. But she was basically in Aleppo at the start of like the kind of uprising against the government regime, just started filming everything, fell in love, had a daughter in this kind of huge like 5 years of like being under siege and like staying in the capital. And I can't even like put into words.
Your face is just selling it to
me. All this stuff is real. It's really graphic, because basically her husband like manages a hospital, and it's like one of the last hospitals kind of in the city, that's taking in people that are under attack. So there's a lot of like really graphic imagery, but there's so many just beautiful images of just kind of like life carrying on and happening, even when it's like surrounded by so much kind of trauma and death. Just incredible. And then kind of in the Q&A section, like her and her family like came onto the stage. Everybody stood up, everyone was crying. Jon Snow was there, he was crying, like just amazing, like just absolutely overshadowed like everything else I saw there. And I think it's actually playing on Channel 4 in the next like couple of months, maybe, in kind of a prime like 9 p.m. slot. So I think it's going to be really like important and interesting for people to see that film.
Oh, wow.
And really come to terms with like what's actually like still going on.
Can't wait.
Let's keep an eye on that, I think, and maybe tweet out or post out when that's coming out on Channel 4, because that sounds incredible. I think we've already got two potential future Bechdel screenings on the cards there. We're not already doing too much. There's two more for us. Karina, tell us something great you've watched, somewhere great you've been that you would like to tell our listeners about.
I'm thankfully spoilt for choice at the moment. I mean, I worked at Sundance London for my second year running, which has been a exhausting delight. looking after all the directors coming over and making sure everyone's happy and they get checked in okay. But because I've been so busy, I didn't get a chance to watch as many things as I'd liked. But I did obviously see Animals, which is a film that I'm also working on, and just loved the film even more just by working with the producer and the director and Emma Jane Unsworth, who wrote the book, and how she has now adapted her own book for screen, which I think is quite a rare and unique thing, because as you often get screenwriters, but for her to actually be the novelist and then get the opportunity to do the screenplay as well has been quite a unique attribute to the film. But to meet Sarah Brocklehurst, who's the producer, who's fantastic, and just the spirit that she has for this film, and then obviously Sophie Hyde, who also directed 52 Tuesdays, and just how considered and thoughtful and creative she is, and in all the panels that she did, she's just so wise. Animals is obviously it's a film that's coming out in August, and we have two females tripping over their 20s into their 30s on a very hedonistic whirlwind tour, and how the choices in life that you have to make as you slip into your third decade can fracture a relationship between your best friend. And it's just very telling and interesting and poignant. And I related a lot to it in ways that both made me laugh and cry a lot. And it made me miss that energy that I had to like really go out and have shots all night, which actually did happen on Sundance closing night. So, you know, it was all there.
Well, I'm going to ask myself what I've done. Well, Beth, I had the extreme pleasure of going to Geneva at the like very recently to visit a really great group of gals called, let's see if I can do them justice, Le Ciné Club de Sieurs Lumière, which I think translates as the Sisters of Light, which is, I'm sorry, but like a lot better than the bedtime. And they're based out in Geneva. They're just Karina is shaking her fist. They're just the most extraordinary bunch of girls. Based in Geneva in Switzerland, where equal rights didn't happen for a very long time, and still actually there's still a gaping hole in workers' rights between men and women. While I was over there, I was really fortunate to go on this women's strike, which was the first women's strike since 1991. And all of these amazing girls came out and did this massive protest basically against the inequality in work. But I got to go over and talk about vampires was my part. So they did a really great screening of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is Anna Lily Amanpour's feature debut. I implore you to see it just because there's absolutely nothing else like it in the world. It's black and white Persian language film about a female skateboarding vampire who like seeks justice in her hometown, and it's amazing. So yeah, they showed me just the most wonderful time, and thank you girls. I'm gonna send you this link and see the film if you can. Well, that was a fantastic selection of films and events and stuff going on. We'll include links to everything that we've spoken about in our show notes. But without further ado, let's get into this episode's profile. The desperately funny, the sweet and stupendously entertaining Regina Hall. In Support the Girls, Regina plays Lisa, the deputy manager of a Hooters-esque restaurant called Double Whammies. Throughout the course of the film, she embarks on what can only be described as the shift from hell, where a family of rats, an attempted break-in, and a Steph Curry tattoo prove to be the very least of her problems.
Nika, it's Lisa. Call me. I need a favor if you can. Just call me back and I'll text you too. Okay.
Can I ask you something? You like working here? You can be honest, no? Think about it.
I like working with you.
That was an award-winning performance from Regina Hall in Support the Girls. Thank you very much, Bulldog Pictures, for that clip. We've arrived at the titular segment of our podcast. And so this episode, I'm going to Steph Watts, Assets Auteur, to ask you, Regina Hall, who is she?
Who is she indeed? Well, Regina Hall, as you'll have heard from the clip, fantastic comedic actress. She kind of started off in kind of smaller roles in like Love and Basketball, which Karina, I think you've seen.
Oh,
you're
yes.
a big Regina Hall connoisseur. then kind of moved on to like working with the Wayans brothers in like Scary Movie. And has kind of had this big kind of comedic career before kind of arriving at these kind of other indie movies. Kind of arriving at this Support the Girls, like more kind of mumblecore, slightly more toned down maybe from kind of other films that she's been in. This like lovely nuanced kind of performance.
Karina, could you give us a little bit more of an outline of what she's done and her body of work? You've seen a lot of her early 90s entries in the oeuvre.
Yeah, so Regina Hall was definitely a staple in the late 90s, early 2000s golden era, as I keep calling it, of black movies. You literally, there was a whole ensemble that were basically in every single movie of that celebrated and showcased very bougie, black, high class, having fun black American families. But the first film that was her breakout was Love and Basketball, where she plays the cute sister. And it's Love and Basketball is such an important movie when you're looking at the black experience on screen for black Americans. And the way that she was basically trying to tell her sister, who was the lead character, how to be more feminine and how to... she was basically the total opposite. But she was a very important role in that, even though it was quite a bit part. But then more of a breakout role for her was The Best Man. And again, The Best Man is such... a crucial, essential movie when you're talking about movies of that ilk. Again, you've got a collaborative of bougie, high aspiring, very middle class to high class black folk just getting on and being creative, and there's a whole lot of love between them and they're all just getting ahead. She was the stripper in Best Man, and she ends up having a very erotic dance with Harold Pin, how do you
Pirineau.
Pronounce it? Pirineau. But anyway, in the sequel to Best Man, both they are now hooked up together, and you've kind of got that trajectory of her becoming a stripper into this wifey material, and it's just, she just plays it so well because she's smart and sassy and she's sexy, but she's got some of the best lines, and there's a fight in the end, and it's great. But yeah, no, Best Man, if you haven't seen Best Man, it's incredibly important. You should watch that.
I'm looking forward, we're going to get into this more in the tail end segment, but she seems to play quite promiscuous comedy roles as well, which is something she's kind of known for in Scary Movie.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that she's really fucking sexy. There is that as well. And she's not seeming to age, not that age takes away from your sex appeal, but yeah, she's... she's got sex appeal, she knows how to use it. It's funny actually, she's grown up as in a very blue collar family. She had very working class upbringing. She studied as a journalist growing up, and that was more to do, I mean, she was smart, she's always been smart. She liked the idea of making films, and she actually wanted to be a director before she wanted to be an actress. But in order to keep her father happy, she was like, okay, well, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to study something and I'll be a journalist. And so that's interesting in the way that I feel that journalists are always storytellers. So she's always had that storytelling vein in her, obviously. But three brothers, no sisters. And there's an interview where she talks about how she told her mum once that she actually wanted to be a Playboy bunny because she saw Playboy bunnies riding around in glitter and roller skates, and what girl doesn't want to be a Playboy bunny after seeing that, not actually understanding what that entails of having to sit on old men's laps. But her mum, it was great because her mum was just like, that's nice dear, maybe you'll change your mind. So there was no enforced, she sounded like she had a very good loving upbringing. Unfortunately her father died from a stroke quite early on and quite suddenly, but she's a very good home, God fearing, well to do, education at the heart, but she's just definitely decided quite early on that she wanted to be a storyteller, and that brought her to making these wonderful films, and she's not stopped working since she decided to do such. So
she's had a great trajectory, and she's moved into TV work quite a lot as well. So she's done she was in a few episodes of Blackish and Insecure with Issa Rae, who she went on to be in Little with, which is a film I'd love to get into in a little bit. But yeah, I think the key points, if we whittle it right down, it's like, yeah, as you say, the golden era of black cinema in the 90s, the Scary Movie franchise. And then she really came into her own, I say, with Girls Trip, which was this like box office smashing sensation.
Yeah, that was a key film. That,
pretty...
The ensemble of Tiffany Haddish and Jada Pinkett and Queen Latifah and herself, it's like, you couldn't ask for better. And then just to have them all just having so much fun, it was basically Bridesmaids but black. And then some. And then some grapefruits. But it was just, it's so great to see these really aspiring, beautiful, exciting women just get together and have a really good time.
Just get silly fun.
It was so funny. Hilarious.
Well, I think you guys have just set this up quite nicely, but Caitlin, I think it almost goes without saying, but please do. Why do we love Regina Hall?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that she's kind of been this very consistent, very safe bet for a lot of her career. She's always, you know, she's been this kind of stalwart figure in black comedy, and it's just, yeah, you just can rely on her. I think she's a very reliable comedic actress, and then it's so great as well to see a film like Support the Girls, where she's kind of, you know, entering a new arena. It's almost like she's had these multiple breakout roles in her career where she's kind of, you know, found a new niche or found an area where she's going to really shine, and she shines in everything that she tries, I think. So it's kind of hard not to love her, I think. But in Support the Girls, she's, you know, as we've said, she's entering this much more of like independent cinema, almost mumblecore kind of field, and she's absolutely wonderful in it. She's just at the heart of this film, and everything revolves around her. And I think you really just, you know, you understand why she's kind of got as far in her career as she has, because she's so important to all the films that she's in.
So I think what's interesting about this role in Support the Girls for Regina is that she's literally in every role. She is the star, the lead, and she really carries this movie. Whereas before, she's very much been a sidekick or a wife or a stripper. This is a very independent movie, and it sees her working with Andrew Borowski, who has given her a lot of freedom, which was great. I know that she had an opportunity to actually talk to him about the character and how she wanted to develop it, and how she saw the character and create the whole backstory. So there's a lot of freedom that she was given, both on and backstage. So yeah, I think this is a really important movie for her to be able to show how much range she has as an actress and show off her muscles of being very dynamic and just having a lot of different strings to her bow.
Yeah, and I think the actual like setting for the film, it's like paradoxically, there's no better place for it, like the restaurant environment.
It is a great setting. I totally agree, because it's so representative of almost life for most women, no matter how you are in the pecking order. I mean, obviously there is the depiction of black women within the workforce, and I think again what Andrew was saying and what she was saying is that this was actually a non-race cast role. However, the role that she plays is somebody that takes on so much for everyone. She's the mother for everyone, and she's always looking after everybody else and putting herself last. And in the conversations that Regina was having with Andrew had said to her, actually, this is where I see most black women, unfortunately. They're automatically and unnecessarily placed in this role of having to look after everyone and just taking a whole heap of shit that they don't need to.
Yeah, I think something that really resonated with me in the film was that kind of like female role of like, you're doing your job, but you've also got to do like the pastoral care, the kind of maternal instinct thing that women are supposed to have, and that
extra work,
kind of taking on that like mental load of like extra work of thinking about how do the girls feel, how is this happening, blah blah blah, like all this. And then you kind of get the male manager further on who kind of comes over in the next shift and he's just like, oh, let's just lend the girls out to parties and stuff, and like isn't really like thinking about that stuff. It's like,
and he doesn't even give them eye contact, have you noticed? Yeah. He doesn't even look at them. Yeah. Whereas Regina is contemplative and compassionate and is thoughtful and is just looking out for them. And she doesn't get paid extra for that.
Yeah.
But she doesn't need, like, she wants to. You can tell she wants to.
But I think it's that thing of like, do women want to do it? Or is it something that has just been pushed on so much that is just something that is taken on inherently anyway without
you ever questioning whether you actually want to or not? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah Shipley, who was one of our amazing panelists, she said something really poignant about that women are judged if they're not nice. So you feel this enormous pressure to feel nice, like to behave nicely and to present yourself as nicely. Otherwise, the fear of being judged by everybody, if you're harsh or if you're seen as being too authoritative, then you're you're looked down upon almost, which I think is so impossibly sad but also incredibly true.
And Nicole was saying this as well, wasn't she, as Nicole's the features editor for Pride magazine, and yeah, just that whole trope of the angry black woman that you don't want to be perceived as that, so you have to kind of code switch yourself into a place where which is acceptable, and you play into this respectability politics of playing the role that you think you need to survive in a patriarchal world.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to look at how kind of ideas about being a boss have been reclaimed for women recently. I think being bossy has always been the term that's been used, and I think that's something that's really needs to have been kind of re-examined. And it kind of comes into, I guess, what we'll talk about with women in comedy, because there's almost like this sense of being bossy, being brash, being loud is kind of coming back into, you know, women are starting to be allowed to do this. And there's interesting conversations happening, I think, especially in Britain with British comedy about who gets the chance to do that. And I think, you know, we can draw on ideas like Fleabag, and there's, you know, the discourse around that show has been kind of so wide ranging, and it's, you know, we've kind of been having these conversations about middle class white women having the chance to be loud and messy and to mess up and to just have these kinds of, you know, outbursts, and to be brash. But, you know, it's really interesting to look at, especially with Girls Trip as well, Regina Hall's film, like how all the women in that film can just be so free and be so loud and do whatever they want. And I mean, Tiffany Haddish especially, she's kind of really like sort of, you know, leading the way, I think, with that fight back for you know, reclaiming the you know, being bossy and being being in charge. It's really important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important because, let's face it, it doesn't work the other way around for men. They're allowed to be bossy, and they're seen as aspirational and successful, whereas women are not allowed to stamp their foot and demand what they want.
And then it's interesting, so Regina's next film, I think it was the next film after Support the Girls that's come out in America, it's obviously a different way around, but she was in Little, and her role in Little is as this kind of Silicon Valley tech corp boss who is hilariously awful to her, like a real workplace bully, like the real antithesis of Lisa. And the comedy kind of draws from how ruthless she is in how spiteful she is to her subordinates, and that in itself is just so interesting to see the contrast between the two. And the only way that she can become a bigger part of the story is to become softer. You know, she reverts back to her. It's kind of like a, is it like a reverse Big? How does Big work?
He's a child.
Yeah, it's reverse Big.
Right.
So she,
in all the ways.
Little. It's in the title, Beth. Little. She wakes up little. Beth.
See the light bulb.
So the only way that we can kind of, I mean, it is a very, very, very funny film, but the only way that we can kind of step into her shoes is when she reverts back to her childlike self, where she is softer and less intimidating. Right. And throughout the film, she becomes softer and she becomes friends with Issa Rae's character. And that's how we get on her side. It's a really interesting and very complex way that we view women in power. I think that's a good partner piece, but it sends very muddled messages. I think
another film that just came to mind that does something like that quite interestingly, I think, and quite well, not unfortunately not a female directed film, but Steven Soderbergh's High Flying Bird, the Sonia Son character is very much that kind of black female boss, and she's that's a really interesting.
Zazie Beetz plays her.
No, so Zazie Beetz plays the kind of, well, she's also a good one for this. She works as well in the kind of, she's the younger employee kind of rising to the top, but the Sonia Son character, she's the actual boss of the company, or the kind of the corporation, and that's a really interesting one, I think, to draw on if you're interested in black female bosses in recent cinema. That's another good one to watch.
All right, so this is the segment in the podcast where we take the bare bones of our subject's legacy and we open them up into a broader conversation. Now, for this episode, we wanted to discuss Regina as a comedian, but also use this as a platform to talk about women in comedy at large and the evolution of the roles that are now available to women in comedy. We've touched on it a little bit already, but I feel like Regina has in particular has had a really, really interesting trajectory. As I said, we've touched on it slightly, but considering where she's come from, she's made these big bankable commercial projects, and now she's at this stage where she's able to simultaneously be on quite nuanced, as we say, mumblecore feature films like this film Support the Girls, and also a film called People, Places and Things, co-starring Flight of the Conchords, Jermaine Clements. What a sweetheart. But then at the simultaneously, she is making films like Little, and she's in the new Shaft reboot as well. And it's, I just feel like this is a really good platform upon which to kind of talk about how women's roles in comedy have evolved and how we respond to them. So I'm opening up the floor. Who's taking the bait?
I think something that's interesting is I saw an interview with Regina Hall where she kind of said that when she was getting into doing the scary movie sort of franchise, she'd been approached, and she kind of had to ask herself if she wanted to play this sort of parody of the stereotypical kind of hypersexualized and sort of loud and kind of hysterical black woman that had appeared in horror movies for you know however long, and she kind of was like, yeah, I want to play that, because it's my time to reclaim that position and to sort of say, you know, we're gonna make a mockery of this ridiculous kind of, you know, these ridiculous stereotypes that have been placed on black women in horror. And it's almost like now she's been that kind of defiant throughout her career, and now I think we see more and more that women are sort of putting their foot down and able to just be like, I'm not doing things for, you know, the sake of it anymore. I'm gonna take back everything that you've ever kind of pushed on me, and I'm gonna do something completely different, and I'm gonna, you know, broaden that horizon to kind of, you know, eat the extremes. And we've mentioned Tiffany Haddish as well, but I think she is the perfect example of, especially a black woman doing that, you know, that's really important to see that happening in mainstream comedy today.
I'm glad you've referenced that interview, because I started watching Scary Movie for research for this podcast, and I had to turn it off. Yeah. I came in so excited, because that for me was the ultimate sleepover film. Yeah. It was so taboo, and it was so gross out and disgusting.
Yeah.
And it was so key to our growing up, and it was so taboo.
Yeah.
And then you look back at it now, and it's so impossibly hateful in so many ways.
It's really good, but that was with Wayans Brothers in their heyday as well.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Then it got real, real bad.
But, and then it got really bad. How many were there? Four in
at
the
least
end?
There's five. Oh, I'm pretty sure there's five.
There are five.
I think maybe, yeah.
I don't
think
Regina was in all of them, but it's so nice to hear that this was her way of at least trying to navigate through this absolute show.
But she says it's still her favourite. She says it's still her favorite film that she's ever been in, and people still come up to her and quote, and she just loves it. And but I mean Regina's just having a fun time with her career anyway. It doesn't seem like she's made anything that she regrets, and she's just on board. She's like, yeah, bring it on.
I think it helps that she's probably the best thing about Scary Movie. Like, she has like the scene where she's in the cinema, and she's like, she brings all her lunch, and she's like filming the screen and stuff. Yeah. She's like, genuinely made me laugh in like a film where I struggled to get through it. But I think that's like a really good thing about her. I definitely agree with that thing of like reclaiming stereotypes, especially with women in comedy. I think a lot of the time it's like, you are the sexy comedian, like put on this skimpy outfit and do your comedy
to be laughed at.
Like there's definitely that feeling of like punching down and kind of you're part of the thing that's being laughed at, and I think that's beginning to be reclaimed, even if it is through, I feel like we have a lot of like gender swapped comedy reboots. Like you have Ghostbusters, Little, which is kind of like the reboot of Big. I mean, Shaft coming back.
Even there's things like Booksmart we were talking about, which is kind of, you know, riffing off of Superbad. There's a lot of kind of which I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm conflicted about, because I would like to just see new stories and not necessarily,
this is exactly how I feel,
like not necessarily having to sort of be like, we're the female Superbad, and I don't necessarily think that's what it was intended to be, but that's how it's being received. And it's kind of like, you know, was there enough in there to avoid those kinds of reception, you know, that receiving of the film. But yeah, it is interesting to see that you know, you're kind of, there are the beginnings, I think, of this whole kind of rebranding of women in comedy and trying to do things.
And even with Late Night, so Late Night is kind of the same thing, in the way that they're talking, they're addressing the fact that there are so few female talk show hosts, and It's really reframed and made it quite poignant that actually, let's think about this. Why aren't there any female talk show hosts in America? This is crazy. Where have they been all this time? And in that, I guess, for lack of a better word, if you can see it, you can be it. I think Late Night is presenting that as, if you know, who wouldn't watch a talk show host with Emma Thompson because she's fucking great.
It's interesting because I just saw in the news, you know, recently that ITV have announced that they're not having all male writers' rooms anymore, which is a kind of a really interesting move, I think, to make, you know, not necessarily just in comedy, but to make situations where, you know, you see a scene in, you know, a film or a TV show and you just wince because you know that there was no woman in the room when that scene was written. And you just know that nobody who has ever experienced the thing that they're trying to sort of say that this female character has experienced was, you know, was part of the writing of that scene. I think there are the beginnings of this kind of initiative to make that change. And I've mentioned Fleabag already, and that's kind of a big one. But again, it's very much about kind of, you know, white women. And I think it's interesting, you mentioned Mindy Kaling, and like, she is like another one of the first kind of women of color to really try and reinvent the comedy genre and do her own thing. Like, she had the Mindy Show, and she's been one of the major kind of players in that field, I think. But it's a shame that we have to limit it to people like her and to Tiffany Haddish and whoever, because there should just be an unlimited number of these women of color doing this.
I'm finding that comedy is proving quite an interesting gateway for women to push through their agendas as well, like with Late Night, like with Booksmart. There seems to be just a message, like they're engaging you with the laughs, whereas I think people like Victoria Wood and Ab Fab is just good silly fun. There's nothing really there apart from, with Ab Fab, two women getting pissed and
they were the original messy women, you know? They were the original kind of, well, in British kind of comedy, I guess, they were the original sort of, you know, we can do whatever we want and we're gonna be drunk. I think it's just, when you look at British comedy, like, the one thing is that, even, you know, across men and women, the majority of people you see on British, like, comedic panels or, you know, game shows, whatever, they've all gone to Cambridge. They're all from, you know, these incredibly upper middle class backgrounds. And that's where I think, especially in Britain, like, that kind of ceiling needs to be broken through. But, you know, there's a lot in, I think America's an interesting one for comedy as well, especially women. I was just thinking of, like, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who have kind of led the charge over there as well. And I'm not, like, as clued up on their kind of histories, but yeah, the way that America, I don't know if America have kind of got there first in some respects, especially with sort of very popular comedy, you know, like 30 Rock and
possibly
Parks and Recreation are popular worldwide, you know.
I mean, there's more platforms for it, but I remember listening to an interview with Gina Reshiro, who is British black comedian, and she was in The Real McCoy, and she's gone to America outright, and she's like, of course I'm going to America. There is nothing for me in Britain. Like, nobody's hiring me here. Of course I'm going
to go. Actually, really interesting, just reference from Docfest. I went to the Jen Nikiru talk, and she was saying, you know, someone was asking her why she's not made films in Britain or about British culture. And she said, because no one's funding me over here. And I go to America and I can make whatever I want because I'm getting the money on it. And it's, you know.
I mean, you look at, like, Mock the Week, like, it's probably like the kind of showcase for, like, British comedy talent. And they still have that thing of, we need to hire one woman a week on this panel, at least so that we'll have one woman. Like, so I think that kind of general doing the bare minimum, not kind of funding or hiring as many. And then in America you have, like, SNL, which is, like, they have this huge cast of, like, American comedians.
Something worth noting is that, and I don't like to bring age into this lightly, but Regina Hall is 48. What do you think that says about older women in comedy? Karina, you mentioned a very funny sketch linking back to Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. Can you tell us what the sketch is called, Karina?
I think it's called The Last Fuckable Day.
I think it's called The Last Fuckable Day. What's The Last Fuckable Day?
It's literally the last day that you could ever be considered sexually attractive. And I think that's just a bizarre decision to be like, right, now I am no longer sexually appealing. I no longer have any use for this vagina other than to wipe it. Like, literally.
There are gestures that went on behind that, Karina. I don't really want to know what goes on there.
But it's telling and it's poignant, because essentially there is so much representation of younger women being the only thing that is sexually appealing, and then
and
at some
funny.
Point and funny, mm. and then you get to. I think going back to what you were saying, Caitlin, about how humour is used, you know, there's many a truth said in jest is mm. it's such a true saying, because you have this opportunity to really talk about things in a funny way that can
softening
actually be
the blow.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not so academic, and it's not so oh, women being feminazis or whatever. It's actually talking in a language which most people can understand. I mean, look at Alison Bechdel. Mm. The whole Bechdel test has come from The Rule, which is a cartoon. You know, and here we are talking about it here 35 years later, and how poignant that is and what that says about the representations of people. So I think it's an incredible tool, comedy, to embrace and harness and use in a way that can say so much about how we treat one another and look upon one another.
And really, in a way, that does sum up exactly what Regina Hall's done, especially, you know, culminating now in Support the Girls, where she is kind of, you know, she's had... It's almost like she's kind of, you know, slipping under the radar. People think, oh, Support the Girls isn't what I thought, because I saw Regina Hall was in it and I thought it was going to be this really loud, brash comedy. And really what she's doing is slipping in this very nuanced, very kind of, you know, understated take on what it means to be a Black mother figure, a Black business manager, a friend, a kind of, you know, a mentor. There are so many layers to it. And there's really this, yeah, I hope the people that kind of think, oh, I'm going to go see this for the comedy, you know, the jokes and the craziness, are actually going to sit there and have this message really relayed to them that's so crucial and so important. And yeah, there are some jokes and there's some really funny bits and there's some, you know, really sad bits, but ultimately, like, there's so much to get out of it. That is kind of, you know, underneath the comedy that Regina's kind of brought, you know, prior to this film.
Yeah, I think that makes it like such a successful comedy film. Like, it kind of reminded me of Eighth Grade a little bit.
Yeah,
in that sense of like, you go in expecting Bo Burnham, like, comedy performer, writer,
crude comedy as well.
Yeah, you expect that kind of thing, but then you get this you get like a connection to the characters, because not everything they say is a setup for a joke. It's like actually building
heartbreaking
character. Yeah, and it's heartbreaking, and then you like that really, yeah, like Support the Girls, like, such like a feel-good film for me. If I don't know if it's like been described like that at all in kind of trailers and stuff, but just yeah, that feeling of like you've connected with like these characters for 2 hours, you've had some laughs, you've had some kind of emotional connection, and that I think feels like a successful comedy to me.
There's so much humanity in it. It's literally just a day in the life of a bunch of women that have to put up with a bunch of assholes, and they get by. And it's so telling of how most women understand life, unfortunately, that we do have to put up with a lot of stupid comments, lewd remarks, dodgy gawping at us, you know. It's, and there's an element in there of picking your battles as well, because if you wanted to get angry, you'd just spend your life angry. But within all the characters, and Regina's character as well, she's very aware of the situation that she is in and her staff are in, but she's aware of the things that she steps in when she needs to. So when she tells the, you know, when one of them apparently calls one of the other members of staff fat, she steps in. She's like, I'm sorry, you were disrespectful to my girls, you need to leave.
It's a real range that you see over the course of that, because the film literally starts with Regina Hall crying in her car.
Exactly, right?
Which is something we go into in the panel, is how the film starts and how her day starts is with her crying but blotting it out almost instantly, so that it doesn't smudge her silver eyeshadow, and so that she's able to instantly put on a brave face when her colleague knocks on the door and gets her ready for the day. But when it comes to the livelihood of the women that she represents, she's unfaltering. You know, as soon as that comment comes out and she sees how upset her employee is, there's not a doubt in her mind what her goal is.
And not to spoil the ending at any point, but it's just the most cathartic ending to
really
a film,
good.
I think ever. It's it makes it all very much kind of, you know, worth it at the end. I think just
well, I think
that's what we're all going to do now.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, you'll have to go and see the film now so you know what we're going to go and do next. Let's just say it's very loud and very disruptive. Look out, London. Well, on that note, thank you ever so much to my Bechdel Test Fest partners in crime. Can you sign off each and every one of you and tell us where we can find you on social media, not in person. I don't want to
come
and
see. 29. My name is Karina Antrobus, and I am Karina Karina on Twitter, double R, one N.
C, not K.
C, not K.
I'm also a C, not a K. Caitlin Quinlan at CSA Quinlan on Twitter, if you'd like to follow.
And I'm _ Steph Watts.
Lovely. I'm Beth K Webb at Twitter. Thank you so much for listening to us. For our next episode, we will be delving into the world of a true master, the one and only Agnes Varda. We'll be launching this in a few weeks. We can't wait. There's so much to delve into with this absolute beautiful, beautiful soul. And be sure to check us out at Bechdel Test Fest on all social media, and we'll launch the episode, this episode here, and we'll be in touch with the next air date. Thank you so much. Thanks, girls.
Who Is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was written and hosted by Beth Webb and produced by Stephanie Watts, with additional support from Karina Antrobus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written and produced by Zoe Mead. Check out her band Wildest on all major streaming platforms. Support the Girls clips were courtesy of Bulldog Film Distribution.